up above that have platforms built across. You can see in the lower left. This has like a laser pointer too, doesn't it? Right there. This is cool. I like this, Dave. I'm going to use this more. And there's a platform there. You'll see better over here. And I got a really good camera on sale at Best Buy for $119. It was like regularly $399. It was clearance. And so I could do a whole bunch with this camera. And this is like a wide angle shot here. They used to have boards going across here. They'd have a structure with drop doors, and then they would put sand over the top of it. And so they reconstructed that so you can kind of see what it was like. These are the underworkings where they would keep prisoners, they keep wild animals. And this is the place where a lot of Christians died because, and ironically, they have a big cross there. And so that's kind of encouraging to see that, you know, the very place they killed Christians, they have crosses there now. This is like the center square of the old part of town. This is like a big old fountain we saw, really old. Looked like something somebody fancy carved like a long time ago. And by now, I'm getting really tired, as you can see. And this is the Vatican to the right. We didn't go in to see the Sistine Chapel because there wasn't time. That would have been kind of neat, but it's a pretty big area. As you can see from here, once again, everything is big in Rome. And we ended the day at this park, and there was a nice rainbow. In fact, Massimo said it was the nicest rainbow he's ever seen. And it was much more brilliant than what I captured in the picture there. And as we departed for Greece, it finally caught up with Natalie and Abby. I mean, they were out of it. It was only like less than a two-hour flight from Rome to Athens. And when the stewardess came by, they haven't slept in 36 hours. They're really tired. And so when the stewardess came by, I was sitting to the left, and she asked me if I wanted something to drink. I said, sure. She asked if Abby had a broken neck or something. She didn't know. And so the first day in Athens, we were seriously jet-lagged. We shopped, went out and shopped for food and supplies, and we adjusted to our temporary home. This is a picture I took from the top of a mountain in the center of Athens. There are 5 million people in this ancient city. There's only 11 million in the whole country. And on a busy work day, there might be 6 million in Athens. And there's only 3 churches of Christ in Athens, and there's only 3 churches of Christ in all of Athens, or in all of Greece. There was one up at Thessaloniki, and it'll probably reopen again, but you know, this is the place where Paul came. And so most of the residents, if they're associated with something with religion, it would be Greek Orthodox. They don't have any mosque in Greece. They having been taken over by the Turks and the Persians, they didn't want any part of that. And so they're pretty much said, you're not building a mosque here. They do have Muslims, but they don't let them build mosque. And so you're looking basically at a Greek Orthodox area. This is outside where we... this is outside where we were staying at the church. And I never saw so many orange trees. Not even in Florida did they have this many. Every street was lined with oranges and lemon trees. But these are nasty oranges. The lemons are fine, but they said if you eat one of these oranges, you'll pucker so hard and you'll have so much acid in your mouth. So they're just decoration. So you'll see people out there beating the trees so they don't fall on their cars. It'd be nice if they could actually do something with those. I have some more pictures of Athens. You never jog there. The thing that drove me kind of up the wall was you couldn't go to a gym unless if you had permission from a doctor. You'd have to go get a full physical from a Greek doctor to go to a gym, and that wasn't going to happen. And so, you know, and you can't go jogging out in Athens or you get hit by a car. So basically, I probably walked about 40, 50, sometimes 60 miles a week during my downtime. I'd take it to a different part of the subway, to a different part of town, and walk around for a couple hours after I was done. And this is a Greek Orthodox church up on top of that tall mountain. And this is the capital city, Athens is, and this is the actual place where the seat of government is, in Syntagma. We did most of our traveling by subway, and the subway system basically boils down to green, red, and blue lines. Once you get that down, you get to about anywhere. cost you $14 to buy a week-long pass. You could travel about anywhere you want to in Athens. And they're clean subways. They're very nice. This is just kind of a look at some of the people. This guy had the biggest eyebrows of anybody in Greece. But he had this craft store, and he made a bunch. And Abby got along with him so well, he gave us really good discounts when I'd go back to buy souvenirs for people in the church. This is like a park. This is some more of the residents here. There's a lot of poverty in Greece. You'll remember they had a crisis a few years ago. They have a spending problem, unlike us in America. And what happened was, because they're in the Eurozone, they had to get bailed out in the terms of hundreds of billions of dollars. And part of the condition of that bailout was every public and private pension in the country was cut by one-third automatically. They have a 23% value-added tax. The minimum tax they have for income is 25%. The corporate tax is 35%. The gas is $10.50 a gallon. I mean, and it causes a lot of poverty in that country. And so you'd have a lot of beggars sitting along the road, gypsy kids playing accordion for change on the subway. And it was kind of depressing in that way. The average person who may have retired with 2,000 euros a month, by the time the government's done with it, they're lucky if they get 600 to live off. And so a lot of families are moving back in. Kids are moving back in with their parents, whereas, you know, you have entire families moving back out to the country because they just can't afford it. And a lot of businesses have closed because of that too. And because they had riots, tourism, which is their number three industry, that suffered by a 70% cut during that year. And so they're just now starting to recover. And so this is the building where we would be at for the next month. And this is kind of where we'd stay. Abby and I had an ongoing joke because this is the kitchen of the church. It's also the kitchen where all the students go. So we'd have to get up real early to go shower. We'd have to walk back there. And so we were between like all everywhere where you cook. And so you had to get up early because you're not going to walk around in a towel or something with the students coming in. And so a lot of times, you know, I would just go ahead and clean up at night. Abby and I had an ongoing joke when we would walk into the kitchen. I'd say, hey, do you need to get anything to eat? I'm going to strip down right now. And so it kind of made you lose your appetite a lot. And we use the church bathroom. And this is the auditorium upstairs. There's a whole other wing over there. This is one of the classrooms here. These would be the two classrooms that we would be teaching the students. And what I noticed is most of the students are from Africa. And it was just like I was in Africa without the malaria. And they have male and female students. They train them to be missionaries. They train them to be leaders in Christianity. And they also provided all the meals for the students while they were there. There's much poverty. I'll be honest with you, Greece is a very racist nation. They really treat the immigrants very poorly. They give them they basically give them what's called a pink card. If you come in on refugee status, and this is what's happened, is the Eurozone pays Greece 2,500 euros for every immigrant they bring in. It's become sort of the dumping ground for immigrants. 2.5 million immigrants in a country of 11 million. I mean, we're talking when these people come in, they don't. If they ever leave, they pretty much take them for the money, and then they just don't give them anything. You can't get a passport. You can't ever leave. If you do, you can't come back. You can't have your family come and see you. Most of these people in these classes have not seen their families in close to a decade or more because they're stuck there. Now, my responsibilities would be to teach most of the 39 registered students from 11 different countries. And I'd be teaching them Isaiah, the book of Acts, and a course on evangelism church planting. And the students were required to take a midterm, a final. They had memory work, and they'll also have to turn papers in to the director. And Abby's responsibility, she did a lot of filming, a lot of interviewing. She also is working on a half-hour documentary for Paul's life in Greece from the time that he went to Neapolis all the way down to when he left Corinth to go back over to Syria. And we'll share that with you when we get it done. She'll narrate it, but I'm going to actually write the words for it. And she also was going to be volunteering at the refugee ministry, where she'd be teaching the kids of refugees, i.e. Afghanistanis or Afghans, the English, as well as helping the women who a lot were under Taliban who never learned. They're learning Greek and English in this ministry. And she'd be helping in the meals for the soup kitchen. And so with that first weekend done, I'd be teaching 3 days a week and about 25 hours. I'd be teaching from Saturday morning to Monday late afternoon. So I was pretty fried by the end of that. And so on the first week we were there, we had planned an excursion to go to the places where Paul was. And we go to Corinth, Athens, Berea, Thessalonica, Philippi, and Neapolis. And this is the path where Paul took on that missionary journey. He would come in, Neapolis is right there, and we'd follow that and go all the way down to there. And I'm going to show you a lot. I'm going to show you from here all the way down to here, different stops along the way. And so this is the up-close look of it. Now, in Acts 16:11, it says, so putting out to the sea from Troas, we came straight away to Samothrace, and on the day following to Neapolis. And so Neapolis, here's the shore of Neapolis. It's called Kavala today. And there was only a couple hundred people when Paul landed back then. Really tiny town. And now it's a very large city, as you can see. This was built by the Arabs after they took over, along with this fort at the top of the hill. There's not much about Paul in this area because it was basically a stop. From there, he would catch the Via Ignatia Highway, which right here you can see it's a road that goes across part of Turkey and Greece, and then they'd take the supplies and ship them over to Rome from there. And so this Via Ignatia Highway is still in existence today. A lot of it just looks like this. It's just a long road where they have a lot of big stones that still are there to this day. We know that Paul walked right on this road. This is coming into Philippi, which that's where our next stop is. In Acts 16:12, that's when Paul arrived in Philippi, and it's a Roman military retirement community, and they were staying there for some days. And this is the mountain that Paul would have seen on his way to where Lydia was. Acts 16:13. Now, because there wasn't a synagogue there, Jews would meet down by the banks of the river, and because it was a relatively new expanding, that's where the Jews would go to do their business. And that's where Lydia from Thyatira went to become a seller of purple. So Paul would go to the Jews first, also to the Greeks. Where are you going to find the Jews? Where's the synagogue? Well, there is no synagogue. Okay, well, why don't we go to the riverbank? That's where they found them. And this is that location right here. This is the spot where they say Lydia was baptized. Behind here is a church that I'll show you in a second. And it's really kind of neat to see that this was where the first convert in all of Europe would be baptized. And her and her household. This is a church behind it. It's a very beautiful church, but it's not that old. It was built back in the 70s. It has a wonderful mosaic to it. And then as you go about a mile further down here, this is the theater. This would be the place where it's said that Paul and Silas were beat in Acts chapter 16:22. You know, people rose up because, you know, they were upset. Here's somebody preaching Christ. They never heard anything about him. And they would have beat them right there. That's Abby and Natalie right there. So it seats 3,500 people. There was about estimated 40,000 to 50,000 people in Philippi at this time. And from there, this is that angle. That's where they are. After they were beat, they were taken around here. And you go by there. And then what's believed to be their prison cell you would get to. Now, the odds are this might not be their prison cell. But it is from the first century. It's from that era. But how can you tell which one they were in? I mean, that's really stretching it. But it looked like this. We know that for sure. And if you could imagine Paul and Silas laying on their backs, and they just were beaten, their backs are raw, they have stocks in, they can't flip over, and so they're laying on their backs. And what are they doing? They're singing and praying and praising God, and it would result in a new prison ministry, which the chief jailer and his whole family and household would be baptized. And so he had to get in that prison somehow, and I guess that's how he was going to do it. Across the road from that, you have just massive, it looks sort of like an atomic bomb hit archaeology at the same time. And you see where these like big 30-foot pillars are. When they started excavating this many years ago, the dirt was clear up to there. How much had gone over and covered it during that time, our tour guide told us. And so there's also, you know, many, many more acres back here that have to be developed or to clear off. And this is some of the pictures. They're doing some stuff right there. There's those close pillars. That's from a 6th century church. There's a beautiful mosaic. And right in here, this is kind of special because it was a tomb, and they found like a couple hundred pounds of gold and some rich guy buried in there in that 6th century church. That's where they were baptized. In the 6th century, there were three massive churches in Philippi that had established. And this is a hot sauna bath. And this is the marketplace to the right, which you look here, and that'd be right over here. So merchants would come in, and then this had big stone going across here. They'd steam it up, fire it up underneath, and they'd take a nice hot bath, hot steam bath, while they were having their goods unloaded, and their merchants would trade with them. And then it actually got rather hot there. In fact, this picture right here was taken as you had a blizzard here. And so, we were saying it was hot and you were saying it was cold. There's another look at there. This is a first century strip mall. We thought we invented that. No, they had lots of those. They would just build a lot of businesses and you keep your goods in there. They'd have roofs going across the top and they'd just sleep in there with their goods. More pillars there. From there, I could show you, I took three. Altogether, we have 3,000 photos. So I got to skim through a lot of these. There's a lot I want to show you, but I can't, at least in this forum. Paul's third stop was to Thessaloniki, is what they call it today. And they came there, and Paul went to the synagogue, and he was reasoning with them about Jesus being the Christ, according to Acts 17, verse 1 through 3. These are the ancient walls of Thessalonica. Paul walked right. He had to come here. He wasn't Batman. He didn't fly over those walls. And so this is Nally and Abby in front of that. These walls were built before Paul was even born. They're still in existence today. This is like some old structures attached to it. This is what it looks like today in Thessaloniki. It's a city of 1 million people. Now what's interesting is the water level used to be up around here. That's where the coast was. But in that time, soil has washed down, established more land, and most of the city is built on that land. In fact, the picture I'm going to show you here, here's a church. This church was built on what was an old Roman bath from that era. But that had been all covered up. So when they built the church over the top of this, look what they found. You got this big Greek Orthodox church. You go down the steps, and here it is, that old Roman bath. So you got something from like the 6th century built over something that's on the 1st century. And it's really kind of neat what they did to it, but very, very ancient under there to think that there were Roman soldiers and other Romans, taking their steam baths here. And from there, there's not a lot in Thessaloniki about Paul. There's just not much in there other than what we know from the Bible. We go to Berea, Acts 17, verse 10. That's the place where Paul went, and he went to the synagogue. He preached to these Jews, the Bereans, and they searched the scriptures carefully to see whether these things were so. This is the side road. This is no longer the Via Ignatia Highway. This is the road that is jutting south. So now that you're headed south, you're not going west. And this would be a section of the road that it's believed that Paul walked on because it's the only road you could access from that distance. And so you have to assume if Paul was in Berea, he didn't parachute in, he had to walk in. And so this is an interesting monument here. This is called the Bema Monument. There's an alley going up to it. It's very beautiful. They have a couple of different images on there. Here's what you see. You see an image of Paul. And these three steps are from the original synagogue where Paul stood on to share the gospel to the Bereans. And this is like an image of him standing on the steps, sharing the Bereans the gospel. That's all that remains of the original synagogue, because the old one had was destroyed back in the 17th century. It was there for a long time. And as we walk down further, we get into what was called the old Jewish district. And here we see the synagogue that was built over the top of the other synagogue. And if you go behind that, there you see a stream, and over the years it has made it go down quite a bit. But this is likely where the Bereans were baptized. Once again, synagogue by the bank of the river. And what's interesting is that around that synagogue you used to have many, many Jews there. And there's a bunch of abandoned homes that used to be really nice. They're falling apart next to some really great homes, and they're kind of all together. And what had happened was, when Hitler came in, he killed all the Jews there. And according to the Greek law, somebody just couldn't take the land. You have to have somebody in the family to take it. Well, there's nobody existing. Those houses are just sitting there, collapsed. Nobody can do a thing about them because of the restrictions on the law. And from there, we went to Athens. And in Athens, there's a lot to see. Acts 17, verse 16 and 17, Paul went in. You know, he viewed all these different idols that they had. And there were a bunch of them. Athens, of course, named for Athena. Paul went in and his heart was smitten with these idols everywhere. And this is a picture of the Acropolis from below. There's a tortoise I thought was kind of neat. I don't get to see a tortoise every day. This was built by a Jew who survived the Holocaust. He donated all the money for the steps going up to the Parthenon. And now this is an interesting photo here. And now I have to be real honest with you. I've read Acts a couple hundred times, I bet, at least. And I've read a lot of books on archaeology. But this really was humbling for me, because this is the temple of Hephaestus. Here's what they call the agora, or the marketplace. And according to Acts 17, verse 16 through 18, Paul came into town. He saw all these idols down here, and then he looked up that hill and saw the Acropolis. I mean, he's surrounded by idols everywhere. He starts preaching Christ right there, and this is taken from the Acropolis. And then the Epicurean and Stoics heard him. They had him brought up here to Mars Hill, or the Areopagus. And it's here that Paul preached that marvelous sermon of Acts chapter 17, which led some of these people to Christ. But if you stand up here and you just talk like I'm talking here, a couple hundred yards away, you could easily hear that. It's very acoustic, friendly. And I thought that was really neat. And all this stuff was built around later. But this is the Areopagus that you read about. We'll have more on that in a little bit. This is where we're walking up the Acropolis, which is a set of buildings, and the big one that you see is the Parthenon over there. I didn't think I would have it, but you almost get ruins fatigued. You see so much. It's overwhelming. You can't even take it in. These are just some pictures from that. This is like a triple temple, Poseidon facing the ocean, Zeus. This is like the maidens here. And there's a lot of different structures up there. There's Hephaestus Temple from the top. This is from first century. This is very, very old here. But they built a new auditorium in here. And people like Celine Dion and famous people have plays there. It's a very tough ticket to get, but you've got to walk through this old and ancient wall to get to the modern. This is a plaque which has the word-for-word writings of Paul's sermon on the Areopagus. And then you walk up to here, and this is what it looks like from the top. And people like to go up there and sit. We saw a lot of people study the Bibles up there. This is the Acropolis. Remember, we saw down at the marketplace here, and here's the Acropolis. So if you could imagine Paul, He says, you know, I see that you are very religious people. He holds his arms out. He's pointing to the Acropolis on one side, the Areopagus on the other side, and, the marketplace, the Agora. I mean, there's so many idols. It's like India or something. They had an idol to the unknown God, an altar to the unknown God, and that's where Paul had his sermon. This is our view from that marketplace, and this is one of those locations in the world where you're talking, and it carries right down to there. And so, you have your different converts that came. Some of the people who heard Paul preaching here, by the time he got up there, they may have heard the rest of the presentation from down there. And from there, you go to Corinth. That's his last stop before he heads over. And it's called Corinthos today. This is a giant passageway that you have a canal that ships. It saves a lot of time. Instead of going like all the way around here, they just pass through there. Now, during the time of Paul, there was a lot less land here. They used to take it and kind of wheel the ship over for a couple miles and dump it back in the water. But now all the topsoil is washed down, so it's many miles from there. But that's how they used to do it. So this is about 300, 350 foot down. It takes a long time to, if you drop something, to hit down to the bottom. This is Corinth, and Corinth has a lot of ruins. They have a museum there. This is Lula. She was our tour guide. Notice all the statues don't have heads or hands, because that's what people stole from the statues, because that's what you can sell the most of. They wanted heads and hands, and a lot of the Persians stripped those down. Here's some statues that are in there. Here's a skeleton they found there. This is kind of neat. This is Dionysius. This is the god of wine. Now stare at his eyes and watch what the mosaic does. Do you see it? It starts waving around. People would come into Corinth. They had this big mosaic, and they'd look at Dionysius, and they would see things moving around with their eyes, and they thought that, you know, he's using the power of wine to make me see things. And it was just an illusion, but they took it seriously. And this is some more ruins from here. This is interesting. This is a second century church building. You can't go in it. There's bars and stuff up there. But this is one of the oldest remaining church buildings as far as it goes back to the second century. And that's very, very old. There's some more pictures of that. I want to get back to the presentation. Let me go. Oh yeah, I got some time. This is kind of neat. This is where Gallio, his judgment seat, in Acts 18, verse 12, when the Jews were trying to start garbage with Paul again, and Gallio got tired of it. And right there, as he's hearing the case, he turns his back and he says, I don't want, you know, you Jews are just causing trouble. You just drop it. This is where he was standing. This is one of the few places that we know where Paul, within a few feet, where Paul was, other than like a road that he was traveling, and on those steps in Berea. And here you have, now it's Saturday again, and we got to start a second week, and we have a lot of students there, and they're from 11 nations, and most of them are African. There are some from other countries. And then on Sunday, you know, I'd have a class I had to teach all afternoon, but then I preached in the morning and preached at night on the second week. Greek services are in the morning, so everything had to be interpreted. Sunday evening is where most of the Africans came, and you're required to speak English to go to AIBI for school. And Abby and Natalie, see, the Greeks originally were blonde-haired, blue-eyed, but when the Turks and the Persians came in and force-bred them, there's very few people in all of Greece that have blue eyes or blonde hair. And in fact, Abby and I were on a subway, and we were kind of having a contest to see who would find the first person with blue eyes. And so when they see people, particularly the African immigrants, you know, like Natalie and Abby, they really like them because they look more like Easter bunnies than them, because they just don't look like most of the Greeks or Africans that they're around. So, and they took advantage of that. Abby and Natalie liked holding the kids. Abby continued her interviewing, filming, and editing. She made many videos for websites for Glyphada, Church of Christ, the one in South Athens. I think Stephanie was there before. Is she here tonight? There she is. Yeah. She spent a semester there. And she has an interview with Benny, a five-minute interview she set up. She did all the filming, all the editing. She spent like 20 hours just for one video putting everything together. So she was very busy. On the 25th, Natalie headed back to the U.S. We finished our teaching duties. And on that Friday, Benny Lika, the director, took us to Sunyan, Cape Sunyan, where the Temple of Poseidon is. And right over here you see Abby, and way over here is the Temple of Poseidon. And so Benny instructed Abby and me on the traditions of the legends of Poseidon. And this is from the top. It's actually surrounded by water with a little... on three sides it's surrounded by water. Of course, Poseidon being the god of the sea, this is where they used to offer sacrifice so that he controls earthquakes, he controls like massive waves, different things like that. So they would offer sacrifice to him. And now we don't have any record that Paul was here, but I guarantee you Paul saw that because he came down that west shore. It stands out big time. It was there 400 years before Paul was there. And that'd be like going to New York City and missing the Trade Center Tower or something. You're going to see it. This is 200 feet right above the ocean. If he took ship or land, he was hugging the coast and he would have seen that. This is a picture I got of Ra, the sun god, or the sun god overlooking Poseidon. I thought that was kind of a neat photo. That's another photo of that. It's one of the three big temples they have there. Nothing compared to the Parthenon, but they do have quite a bit of it there. On that Sunday, we went to Glyphada Church of Christ, and that's Dino Roussis. We had a few meals with him. We did a lot with him and his wife. And this is the congregation where 40 Harding students who go to a semester in Greece, that they attend. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour for them to get there, but that's where they attend. And so it was kind of neat when we go there, we'd see a lot of people that either A, we knew, or B, knew somebody that we knew. And so you just fit right in. Then there was some benevolence for the poor. Every month, there's about $2,000 of benevolence for money that's donated from different congregations through Monahan's Church of Christ. And they take that money and they buy food and supplies for 20 Christian families. And it takes about 8 hours. We only got half of it in the car because there's no way we can get it all. So this is just half of it. It was like carts filled up. It took like... It takes about 8 hours to process everything from the time you leave to go get it to the time you get it into boxes. And there was a guy who showed up behind us in line, not looking. I don't know if he was texting, but then he had like a pack of gum and something. And like we had what took 45 minutes to check out. And I said, you might want to go to a different lane at this point. And he did, of course. But then we had to bag it all up and the car was just bagging down big time on the way back. And those families, though, are so excited because a lot of these families, they don't have anything. It's very difficult. And that food box and supply box that they're given is really the bulk of what they'll have for the month. And so it's a very good ministry, and it helps Christians directly. This is some of the refugee ministry that Abby was working. And these are it's an Afghan ministry. Every single one of the people they're reaching out to came through Afghanistan. They may not all be Afghanis, but they all had to come through Afghanistan. There's a big influx of them. You know, they're fleeing for their life. They know what's going on. And so here's some of the ladies. They're learning to read and write in Greek and English, and Abby helped them in obviously the English side as well. And it's really a great ministry. This ministry, I was told by I think it was Dino, that they convert 3 or 4 dozen Muslims a year out of this. And these are people who came from hardened lands where they had Taliban. This is a girl that Abby really liked, and so I wanted to put that picture in of her. And then the Monday night before we were leaving, we actually They have a big meal every Monday night. And this is the last Monday night we're there. We're going to be leaving in just 2 days. And it's on the 9th floor of this building is where the ministry is organized, the refugee ministry. And we go up to the top floor. There's going to be 200 Muslims there. They're going to be fed, or 200 refugees. They're going to be fed a nice soup, 120 quarts of soup. There's 60 loaves of bread, like dozens of bottles of olives. And that's really their big meal of the week. And when we're on top of the building and having a prayer beforehand, that's really what we're looking at. You can see it right back here. Now, this doesn't even capture it. This is what it looks like when you're standing on top of that roof. And it was really the best view I had of the Parthenon other than being up by it. I thought it was very beautiful that night. And then this guy I want to tell you about is Chamas. Chamas was one of those converts from last year. He is a 23-year-old young man. He's blind. He got in a car accident in Afghanistan when he was 17. And he came to Greece as a refugee, hoping that he can get a surgery to see again, and he might be able to repair some of that sight. But also because, you know, he's in danger there because he didn't like Islam. But he is the primary translator for Glyphada Church of Christ now. He speaks very fluent English, obviously Arabic. He speaks fluent Greek. Some people just really take to that. And took him out to eat one night, and he always takes your hand when you talk with him because he wants to see where you are. So he'll talk. So he takes your hand, and you feel kind of special when you think about, here's somebody who he's so happy, yet he's blind. That's because he saw the light of Christ. And he just loves to share. He's interpreting for this man giving the lesson. Now, this is some of the pictures of the families from the refugee ministry that are going to be eating that night. And there's 200 of them there. And many of them are very close to becoming a Christian. I mean, they're near to the kingdom of God, the almost persuaded Christians. And this is Abby sneak peeking some of the soup. And she did a lot of the serving. My job was to visit the English-speaking Muslims and try to encourage them and answer any questions that they have. They had just big pots of soup, big bowls, and this soup was very good, but it caused a lot of gas. I would not want to be in their family's home after they ate that because horrible it was. And a lot of them are very, very happy to have this meal. And they hear a message for a half hour about Christ, and they do it repeatedly. And then there's Abby cleaning up some more. There's a little girl that really likes Abby. She ran up to Abby and while she was cleaning up. This is Chamas again. I want to tell you a story about that. Because this guy and the guy across the table from him, when I was taking pictures, everybody wanted their picture taken. But these two guys didn't want their picture taken. They were covering their face up. No, don't take a picture. No, take a picture. You know, and so I just kept an eye on them because, you know, I felt like they were probably up to something. And sure enough, they were. When Chamas was done doing the interpretation into the Arabic language, now remember, he's a former Muslim, and now he's propagating Christ to Muslims. These guys didn't like it. And so what happened was, one of the guys, now I caught this on film. I didn't know what I was catching on film because I didn't speak Arabic. But Chamas reached out to grab his hand. And as he grabbed his hand, he asked, "What is that?" And the guy had a folded buck knife in his hand. And Chalmers asked, "Well, what is this for?" And he said, "That's the knife I'm going to slit your pig throat with for leaving Islam and preaching Christ." And then an argument ensued. And it was actually my video that kind of caught the guys who did it, because they got out, but they turned them into the authorities. So there's a lot of Muslims there that they really put the heat on people when they become a Christian. This guy is Ali. Ali, when he saw me, he called me over, speaks very good English. He called me over and he says, "I want a picture with Bill Clinton." And I said, "You think every white guy from the States looks like Bill Clinton?" He says, "No, you do." And so I visited with him a good hour. And he has a very interesting story. I mean, he came from Afghanistan. All his family was killed, all of them, either by the war or by the Taliban. He fled for his life, came, and because of all the racism and hatred, because a lot of the Greeks, they say, wait, so we were taken over before by the Persians. We don't like this. And so they really treat a lot of people bad. And neo-Nazi groups have sprung up. This guy was a victim of a neo-Nazi group last year. He was stabbed 9 times, and they stuck the knife in his head and left him to die. And he spent a month in the hospital, and he survived. And he showed me the scars that he had. And he is so close to becoming a Christian. He's so much given up on Islam. But, you know, I wouldn't doubt in the next month or two if he doesn't convert. And there's a lot of them like that. And it's really exciting to see, once they get free choice, even in the midst of persecution from people, they want to do the right thing. Finally, we got to eat our soup. And our last day in Greece, I want to tell you what happened. Dino Roussos, the preacher from Glyfada, he's an ACU graduate, and he married an ACU graduate. And I met him before because I was very good friends with one of his converts, Hashem Nosser. So when he came to Sunset, Hashem introduced me to him. He didn't remember me because I was just some student at the time. I should have squeezed his hand real hard, then he would have remembered me. But Dino's had a travel agency for 25 years. And Dino asked, "Well, what are you doing your last day in Greece?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, say goodbye," things like that. He said, "No, go on a cruise. I'll get you a really nice cruise at a very cheap rate." So like for like $100, they took you on a 12-hour cruise to 3 islands in the area where Paul would have passed through on his way to Syria. And the dean of students, his name, it was Peter. And all the other students left on Monday night already. And Peter was the only one in the building. We really liked Peter. Peter was just a person you really like. And Abby and I decided we wanted to spend a little extra money and take Peter with us. And when he came, when I asked him, I said, "Peter, what are you doing tomorrow?" And Peter said, "Well, I do not know. It's our last day." I said, "I bought you an extra ticket to go on this cruise with us." And he went, "Oh." It just, he lit up like that. He went, "Oh, sir, very excellent, sir." And he said, "I always wanted to go on ship to Greek island." He says, very good, sir." And so he was really excited about that. We left the next morning. They picked us up. There's Abby and Peter on the back of the boat. There are over 2,000 islands. There's only like 220 that are inhabited, though, for Greece. And this would have been the area that Paul would have cruised through. He would have been looking at these islands, because once again, he didn't fly to Syria. He took a ship. And there's a lot of just little islands you wouldn't want to live in. But then there's some big islands that are nice. This is Hydra, which means water in the Greek. And this island is a very old island, very interesting. All the roads are very narrow. And you could never drive a car on. So they all take burros. That's your transportation there. And instead of Avis Rent-A-Car, they had burro rental. And you showed up. "You want to rent burro?" You know, "No, we decided we walk up," because I didn't want to smell like burro the rest of the day. And we walked way up into the mountain there. We had a couple hours there. And it has a beautiful view on a beautiful day of the island. There's Abby standing there. And they just have a lot of old structures there. This picture here is Abby meeting Bert, the burro. But this is I threw a bunch of chips on the ground, crumbs. And then all these pigeons came down. I said, "Abby, run for it." She ran for it. I got this nice little circular picture of her and pigeons fleeing for their life. They had a lot of kayaking there. We didn't do that. But then we leave there and we transport to Poros. And Poros, the one island, first one, Hydra, is 60 kilometers from Athens. Poros is about, I think it's about probably 35, 38 kilometers. And I wanted to get a picture of Peter catching the sun because he wanted to send one to his dad in Africa. And so we arrived at Poros. So it wasn't much to see in Poros. After you go to Hydra and you go to Poros, I mean, it's not even close. But they had a big watchtower there, a clock tower, had some ships. It was kind of nice, but they had more cats than anywhere on earth. Everywhere, cats. Everywhere you looked, nice cats, bad cats. This guy scared me. He had something on his nose. I wasn't going to pet him. This guy was so cute, I wanted to go in that guy's store and just take his cat. But then I got to missing my cats. This cat actually, I think, takes the cake here. He had his own motorcycle, and I thought that was cool. He was just sitting out waiting for someone to come by. And we leave there and we go to Ahina. And Ahina is a big island. About the biggest thing to see on it is what's called the Temple of Apollo. Now what's interesting is 19 miles away where you have the Parthenon, this is a replica of what you would see back then, the statue of Athena, four stories high in there. Gold and ivory face gold. Here's like the size of people. When the sun rose at the Parthenon, when the sun would shine in there, see, this is her brother, Apollo. Apollo, Athena. He was watching out over her, and when the light would reflect off there, you could see it from this temple 19 miles away, and that's how they planned it. Okay? So they really put a lot of detail into these things. And there's some more pictures of Ahina, and that guy ate all my sunflower seeds. They got stale. I didn't want them anymore. And then we finally head back to Athens. And so on our last night, this is Athens at sunset. I really like this photo because it was kind of humbling to think of all those people there and millions, and there's only three churches of Christ there. So we go back to the U.S. Now, we had taught students and refugees well over 120 hours. No less than 230 individuals were fed and or supplied with food. Multiple videos were recorded and ready to be placed on the new websites. Richard Clark's actually building the first website for AIBI and Glyphada Church of Christ, and the videos Abby filmed will be on there telling about the school. And we got lifelong friendships and the biblical sites. You know, I learned more about the book of Acts in that second missionary journey than I ever thought I would. And it was really exciting about that. One of the things that we want to do is, I'm glad I got through all that in that time. One of the things that we plan on doing is I'd like to go back there in the future again, because AIBI needs a lot of help there for teachers to come and teach. And Benny, they only have two instructors there, and they have to do everything themselves. And so Truett Adair, the president of Sunset, has asked me if I can find some preachers, some elders who are good teachers who can go over and do the same thing like what we did. And I hope that there will be some opportunities. I would really like it. There will be more opportunities coming up, and please try to help in those opportunities, because I would like to see you go there so you don't have to see a slideshow. You can become a slideshow in the work of the kingdom. Now, you can do the work of the kingdom anywhere, but you know, we do have the fourfold example from Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the earth. Christ is a worldwide God. He's not an American God. He's not a Greek God. He is mankind's God. And so we always need to be cognizant of that. If you need to respond to the invitation for any reason at all, we offer the song of invitation that Russ will be leading at this point.